Hey, welcome to season two of The Protectors. One of my favorite TV shows right now is The Rookie. Yeah, The Rookie. You know, it's some of it's not that realistic, but some of it's just really cool. I love the acting. I love how they bring a crew together. And I love that they show that the main character is an older guy going through the police academy and becoming a protector. It's really cool. Today, I have one of the producers on, John Steinberg. Very excited to have him in. I also have a great co-host, Jen Marshall. So let's bring him in. Good afternoon. How's it going?
Afternoon, guys.
Jen hi. Marshall.
Hi.
And John Steinberg. I have to get my cool TV voice in. John Steinberg, producer of the upcoming and the previous seasons of The Rookie. Yes, The Rookie has been extended for another season, and we're really excited. Congratulations, John.
Thank you. So funny. The world, I'm on a podcast. It's my wife.
It's their filming. She's got to say hi now.
Yeah, come my on. Wife.
Hi, John's wife.
Hi, John's wife.
Sorry, it's the world we're living in COVID. She's working from home, too. We got our season three pickup yesterday, so we're super excited, and I think what I learned when I was younger is to make sure you surround yourself with people smarter than you. If you're the dummy in the room, you did something right, and thankfully I've been succeeding at that lately.
Welcome to my world, hence why I have Jennifer Marshall on as my co-host today, because I like to have people who are smarter than me on. John, you know, we did a little pre-interview before this, and you were talking about going to school in Syracuse. Now, I grew up in Jersey, and I had tons of friends go to Syracuse, and it's a great school, and it's very, like, a lot of art-based people, and a lot of people go there that want to get into the industry. Was getting into the industry one of your main goals when you went to college?
Yeah, and I got to ask you, where in New Jersey are you from?
It's called a place called Blairstown. It's up by the Pocono Mountains.
Yeah, I went to boarding school in New Jersey. I went to a school called Petty outside of Princeton, and Blair was our biggest rival school. And every
year
you go up to Blairstown to play sports. So I know the area well, very beautiful. So small.
It's awesome. Yeah. And whenever I mention Blair, some people are like, what, where? There's like 5,000 people there. Right. Yeah. Blair's awesome.
So go ahead. Syracuse, I was excited about Syracuse because I know Syracuse and Northwestern have a big rivalry of who's the best, what's the best communication school. I was attracted to Syracuse. I always loved sports. I grew up a big Big East fan in New York, a big St. John's fan in the 80s during those great years. And Syracuse has a Newhouse School, which is a tremendous communication school. They also have a great theater school. I know we have a talented actress, Jennifer, on with us. But Syracuse is really known for the theater school. It's really known for the sports and the communication. And if you really watch SportsCenter, I mean, so many of those guys, I don't think people realize how many of those guys are Syracuse. That over the years, Bob Costas and Marv Albert and Len Berman and Mike Tirico and Dick Stockton and Ian Eagle. And I could just go on and on. It's pretty crazy. But it's just they are like the feeding ground of like the big sportscasters. And so I went there for that and ended up doing communication and theater and English. And the other thing I liked about Syracuse is I really was looking for a school that had the best of both worlds. I found like a lot of schools were great, small little liberal arts arty schools, or they were big, huge schools and sports schools. And Syracuse was one of the few schools I found that I could be in a fraternity and have fun. I mean, I grew up, I guess like a lot of people, Animal House, Revenge of the Nerds. I loved all those movies.
Yes.
Growing up. And so I got a little bit of everything there, which was a great experience.
Syracuse is great. I went up there once in the middle of the winter, and I had this old beat up car, and it was sleeting and snowing, and my windshield wipers broke, and it was probably one of the most memorable experiences of my life driving to Syracuse.
Where did you go to school?
What was that?
Where did you go?
Oh, I went to school in Minnesota, but I had a bunch of friends that went to Syracuse.
Yeah,
Minnesota and then San Diego. Great. It's interesting. One thing I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to let Jen jump in here in a little while too, is what is the PAGE program? I'm, you know, reading your bio and trying to find anything about you is like trying to find something about the CIA or something. It's tough, but what does PAGE program that you did?
The one visible thing you've seen about the PAGE program is when like David Letterman would walk off stage and you'd see that, you know, man or woman in their 20s wearing a CBS blazer, open the door for him smiling. That was the PAGE that was on assignment on the Letterman show. It's a great entry program into television. And I didn't want to leave New York. I know most people did to move to LA to get into entertainment, but I just love the city. I grew up there and never thought I'd leave. And so CBS and NBC both had PAGE programs, which again, were just probably the top ways to immerse yourself into television and develop the kind of contacts and skill sets you should, kind of work on moving forward. And so that really kind of got me started in TV. Funny enough, I was actually doing commercials, Jennifer. I used to do TV commercials on camera. But while I was doing that, I was also a CBS page, because in the back of my mind, I always knew I wanted to be on the business end of things. So, you know, funny enough, I made a lot more money doing commercials and working at CBS. It was just a great way to really kind of get into TV and kind of keep my eyes open.
John, I want to ask you a question about how this process happened for The Rookie. So, just some backstory for our viewers. You went to college with one of the other executive producers, Bill Norcross, who The Rookie is based on. He was 45 when you went through the academy with LAPD. So how does that happen? You connect with a college friend and he's telling you all these crazy stories. What is the process from that coffee meeting to actually getting the series approved and then onto the air and then renewed?
That's a great question. So the way I found out about Bill, the real life rookie, he actually called Rachel and I, my wife, and he's like, look, I need to start my life over, not really happy with where things are. And can I stay on your couch in your guest room? Because as Jennifer, you might know, often it takes months to get into the academy, if not longer. And they had a brand new program at the LAPD, which was this expedited program, which was only 8 days long. It was an intensive. And so after 8 days, either you're in or you're out. And so Bill stayed with us for 8 days. 40-something people started this program. And at the end, only two people were left. And Bill was one of the two. And so once he got through the academy and 9 months later, he's one of us now. Of course, you guys are our heroes and have served in the military. And again, you have my gratitude for that. I'm not, and so the fact that a guy like me suddenly is walking around the Rampart Division in LA, with a gun on his belt ready to shoot somebody, I'm like, holy crap, And so the stories he's telling me, what a lot of people don't realize, and I've learned this from another project I'm working on with Fred Burton that I know, we might touch on here, but very often when you see shows, and like Southland was a great show, but it's also very serious, very intense, and Bill's telling me these stories, and some of them are heartbreaking, some of them are beyond intense, and some of them are the funniest stories you've ever heard. There's actually a lot of laughter and a lot of joy and a lot of humor going on during their day because they see the craziest things. And as he told me these stories and the fact that Bill and I are the same age and the fact that he was in real life was reflected in season one of the show, but he was dating a fellow rookie who was, 20 years younger than him, almost 20 years younger. And I said to him, wait a second, you're having sex with a girl born in the 90s? That's amazing. what I realized, because again, like as a producer, there's, and I've learned this from people, who have mentored me, on the producing front and in TV, the industry is getting pitched 100 stories a year about cops. There's nothing unique about that. It's really about who's the protagonist. And one thing that's interesting about this protagonist, and again, we further flesh it out for television, is the guy's older, the guy's slower, and of course, he's more hardwired, and those are challenges that he has to face that younger cops don't. But at the end of the day, he's smarter, he has more life experience, he has this skill set from people skills, and the fact that in real life Bill ran a business, you know, so he knows more than just people skills. He knows accounting, he knows forensic, he knows supply chain, he knows communication, he knows transportation. All those skills serves a cop, on patrol. And to utilize that and really to flesh out this character, because we've seen so many shows and so many movies about the young stud rookie and old veteran. And that story has been told countless times, but to really completely have this unique hook that it's the older cop who, yes, he is older and he might be a little slower, but utilizing that skill set, utilizing that smarts, that life experience, that intelligence that other cops that have never lived an adult life outside the police force don't have, we see him get unique wins as a police officer in a way that we've never seen a cop get before. And as you guys might also realize, just from an entertainment standpoint, there's a great wish fulfillment element to it. But sometimes when we watch shows, we want to kind of really relate. And there's really this wish fulfillment element of like, wow, whatever I do in my life, I could be a great cop. And frankly, people probably could, because if you really take the skill set you're doing, now, of course, being an officer is extremely dangerous. It's extremely difficult. And they have my utter admiration. I'm obviously a huge fan of law enforcement. But that said, the fact that Bill in real life had the skill set, and we obviously, you know, kind of really flesh that out. And the other thing that's interesting from a personal level, because, you know, a show I've always loved is Grey's Anatomy, and they did a great job of bringing the personal element into the medical procedural. And as Bill started telling me stories about, again, dating this much younger woman, I'm like, oh my God, it's like Grey's Anatomy in a police station. And so what's interesting with Bill's position is while he's learning about police work from these younger officers, he's teaching them about life, because he's the only one that truly has lived a full adult life outside the police department before becoming an officer. And the other last thing I will say about this unique kind of experience that he's had, that again, it's part of this, you know, interesting element of Nathan Fillion's character is, and again, you know, I welcome Jennifer, your input on this as you know, being on the other side of the dating pool of being a woman. But what's interesting for this character is the women he's dating are either the women that are his contemporaries are six promotions ahead of him, whereas the women that are his contemporaries on the work front happen to be 20 years younger. So he's kind of like this fish out of water in the dating world, which I find really fascinating as well. And I think, again, that's a real fun kind of experience and element to really kind of dive into for the show.
I do have to say, I love the casting. Excellent. I mean, I don't know what it would be like if you didn't have Nathan Fillion. He's been one of my favorite actors for God knows how long. You know, you go back to the old, you know, Firefly days, before that. I mean, just a great dude. Right. Do you have any input when it comes to the casting?
Yeah. And actually I would like to go back to Jennifer's question in terms of how this ground, because again, there's a lot to cover, and I don't, you know, I just want to make sure I answer the questions the best I could for you guys to be helpful. So after I sat down with Bill and I said, oh my God, this is a police show. I got his life rights. And so in terms of being a producer, one key if you can is get your hands on IP, get your hands on intellectual property, you know, some kind of valuable piece of intellectual property that you could utilize to inspire some kind of series, some kind of, you know, film. And so first thing I did is I got the life rights to Bill, to his experience. Then from there, I reached out to a friend. So my wife, Rachel, happens to work at ABC. And through her and through my own experience in TV, I happen to be friends with Nick Pepper, who at the time, now he's running Legendary. I don't know if you'd be embarrassed in talking about him, because he's a mentor to me and one of the smartest people I've ever met. But at the time, he was running Mark Gordon's company. And so I was in TV for years. And then frankly, I took a break and I got into the entrepreneurial space and the biz dev space. And so for a few years, I was working with major blue chip advertisers for a men's publication. And in a sense, I was doing the exact same thing you do in TV. I was taking a piece of IP, a brand, and telling the most creative story possible that I can to a target demographic, making sure it resonates with their target demographic. And so when I took Nick Pepper through this vision I had for The Rookie, and I wrote up a whole kind of treatment. And that's something that I like to do as a producer. Some producers might just get the rights to a book and say, hey, talk to a writer, give me a take. For the shows that I develop, I truly have a unique vision of what the show is. I'm very specific. And then, of course, you cannot let your ego get in the way. And I'm not the showrunner. Alexi Hawley's a showrunner and it's his show. So I will bring a very specific vision for a show I'm developing with the preface of it's not about ego for me. It's your show. And I sit down with showrunners. So I took Nick through this pitch and I said, look, I'm getting back into TV. This is my vision of this show. I thought I would bring it to you first just because we're buddies. And I know we've talked about working together. If you don't want this, the biggest favor you can do for me is to tell me now. That's one thing I learned in the entrepreneurial space and why that was so valuable to me to be back in TV again. Get to the no. That's something I always advise people. Mm-hmm. If you want to keep things is hopeful as possible and you want to work really hard, but if something's going to be a no in terms of a sale or in terms of a project, better to get to that now than get to that in 6 months from now, spinning your wheels. And so I said to Nick, do me a favor. If this is for you, great. If not, I took him through, you know, spent the next half hour and took him through this my vision of the series, the tone, the protagonist. And he's like, I hear 1,000 pitches a year. This is one of the best pitches I've heard all year. We're going to get the show on the air. And I said, great. So Mark Gordon, who again is a legend, and I'm sure you guys know, I was honored to be able to work with Mark. Again, to be you know, much younger and you know, watching Saving Private Ryan in the theaters and him getting an Oscar for that, and suddenly now I'm working with him in TV is an honor. Funny enough, in Saving Private Ryan, Nathan Fillion has a great little role in that that people might not realize. He's the role of Private Ryan that they found, you know, one of his first, it might be his first big film role. So anyway, so once we locked up a deal with Mark Gordon's company, Nick is like, look, you've been in the biz dev sales space, you know, in the entrepreneurial space for the last few years. Let's utilize that skill set. Let's see what you got. I'll set you up with 8 big writer showrunners, and it's your job to sell them the show. Let's see what you can do. And so I sat down with about 8 writer showrunners, and Nick is like, if one or two of the showrunners want the show, that's great. And pretty much every single one of the showrunners that I sat down with wanted the show. So we were obviously really fortunate that we saw that we were onto something even more so. And when we sat down with Alexi Hawley, he was the last showrunner on Castle, and he had a great relationship with Nathan Fillion. So we were in an amazing position because we were able to attach not only Alexi Hawley as a showrunner, but Nathan Fillion to star in the show before we even had a script.
Wow.
So from there, we knew, of course, we were going to sell it. It's just a matter of what's the best deal we can get. So we were able to get a bidding war between multiple networks. We were also able to attach Liz Friedlander, who's one of the best directors out there. She is fantastic. And so we also had her as the director for the pilot. And ABC made a serious commitment, which was fantastic. And it made me feel pretty good, frankly, in the sense of, my wife happens to work there, and it almost became reverse nepotism. It wasn't like, you know, and the fact is my wife would never do that for me anyway, which drives me nuts, but she never would, rightfully so. But point is, it wasn't like her saying to her team, hey, you know, check out my husband's project. It was really like the team saying to her, hey, it's Steinberg. He's one of us. If he doesn't sell, it's us. What the hell, you know, kind of thing. And we obviously ended up selling it to ABC and went through the pilot process and everything has been a grind. I mean, the fact that we're looking at series 3 right now, it's like, it's hard to write a great pilot script, and Nathan and Alexi did a great job. And again, but it was a long process to get to where we needed to be. And obviously the pilot, then we got the pickup, then we had our season 1 and each process, all right, we got to pilot, then we got, you know, the 13 episode order for season 1. And then from there, oh my God, are we going to get our back season pickup? And then we got our back season pickup, and then we had a full season 1, and then we got season 2. And, you know, it's been a process going through that. So to get season 3 now is it's great. And it's sometimes it's easy to forget those little details and those stressful moments of sleepless nights, but we're really lucky. And again, I feel truly blessed to work with just such a great team. So I feel like I'm truly lucky in all this.
Yeah. I'm amazed that, you know, I'm glad there's a season 3. I'm a big TV movie guy. If you ever go to my TikTok, it's The Protectors, but then it's like, I love 80s movies, and I have, I just do 80s clips, and they're getting like 30,000 hits because I love 80s movies. I love being vested. I like being a show because like the characters become almost like a family. And right. I'd imagine, you know, Jennifer feels the same way when she's been on set and working with people and getting those attachments. One thing I did want to ask you about is, you know, The Rookie is incredible, but now you're working on another project and it's in development phase with one of my really good, he's almost like my counterterrorism mentor, Fred Burton. So you want to touch on that a little bit, because this is one of, when you mentioned that in a pre-interview about doing this project, I didn't realize it was you that was working with Fred, and this is amazing.
It's a small world, isn't it?
Yes.
I was a fan. So as you guys might know, Fred Burton and Sam Katz wrote Benghazi, a New York Times bestselling book about Benghazi, which is set up at HBO right now. And so their follow up book was called Beirut Rules, and the core subject matter was about William Buckley, our CIA station chief that was abducted and eventually murdered. In Beirut in the early 80s. And there's a lot of things that I found fascinating about this book. I mean, first of all, William Buckley is truly not only a hero, but he really was one of the most selfless Americans I've ever read about in my entire life. I mean, when you dive into this book, and I highly recommend everybody out there read it, he knew he was never seeing the light of day once he got there. I mean, he almost said to, you know, Chip Beck, who's another hero, who's also in the CIA, who I've spoken to about the project, William Buckley was almost like, just make sure I die in a Husky rescue attempt. I don't want to die alone in a cold, dark cell, which ended up happening to him tragically. But he saw the writing on the wall of where things were when he was over there, and he had no illusions. And yet he still did his job and showed up to, you know, that office every day. So not only was it just heartbreaking and heroic and inspiring, but what I realized, again, you know, I look at a piece of IP and I say, all right, here's a great story. But that said, if you're doing a story about William Buckley, you don't have a TV show. You know, probably you just have a movie, you know. And so, but what I realized, the bigger vision here is this truly is the origin story of the war on terror. And there's two things I try to look for when I develop a TV project. Either a unique window into a genre we love, which is what we did with The Rookie, you know, this unique hook on that mm-hmm. character that, you know, we haven't seen before. And in terms of Beirut Rules, what really attracts me to the project is what I realize is this really truly is. Look, we all know the war on terror. We're still fighting it to this day. But most of us don't know who started it, why they started it, and how they started it. And this is truly that origin story of how it all started, as well as the rise of the first global terrorist networks. And there's this fascinating character. And again, he's evil, and thankfully we finally killed him, but it took us 28 years to find and kill him. His name was Ahmad Mignaye. And what makes great television is understanding why he did what he did. And the fact was, like, when you look at other series that I personally loved over the last few years, one in particular, Narcos, which was on Netflix, you know, when you watch that show and you watch Pablo Escobar and you watch the character of Felix Gallardo, you realize that they saw the mm-hmm. future or anybody else. They were innovators. You know, of course they were, you know, ended up, you know, with the right intentions starting on. Of course they ended up becoming horrible men. But that's something I also found interesting about Ahmad Mignaye is, you know, he thought he was doing the right thing. Of course, you know, he was an evil terrorist, you know, that obviously killed countless Americans, but so much of the world we live in today is because of him. And so really that origin story of how the first global terrorist network was formed and how the war on terror is. And again, I highly recommend reading the book, but it's not a coincidence that as the Cold War was ending, the war on terror began. Mm-hmm. And it really is just kind of one bled into the other. And so after reading this book, I reached out to their agent in New York. I'm from New York, so any excuse I have to get back there is always a great thing for me. And, you know, again, what really helped me, and Jennifer, you know, I'm sure you know this from being, you know, obviously in you know, the entertainment business, is once you get one project off the ground, it really opens the doors for you. So to have The Rookie on the air and to have that kind of cachet, it's opened a lot of doors for me. So I was able to sit down with Sam Katz and Fred Burton, and I shared my vision of what I wanted to do with their book and my bigger vision for a TV series, and they were sold. And thankfully from there, we set that up at Sony, and now we have literally an incredible team of writers, Howard Gordon and Alex Ganza from Homeland and 24, We have Avi and Lior, who are the showrunners on Fauda, which again, I cannot recommend that series enough. If you haven't seen it on Netflix, it's incredible writing. And so we have this great team. And again, I'm the one who feels so fortunate to be working with people that I truly feel are a lot smarter than I am. And so that's a project I'm super excited about. A, from the team I'm able to work with, but also just from the fact that we're really kind of diving into this world that we all know we don't know how or why, and we're going to do that here, and that's super exciting.
John, I wanted to ask you a question about technical advisors, because veterans can be, and I'm sure law enforcement community as well, Jason, you let me know, we can be kind of the most vocal you know, people who give critiquers on social media to say, you know, this isn't right and that's not right, and the belt, you know, the Sam Brown's messed up and this is messed up. So how do you guys decide who your advisor is going to be? How much, you know, pull do they have over what's happening? Because clearly, you know, you're not going to have a typical rookie's year in LAPD is not going to be full of, you know, car chases and shootings like there are in most episodes. So how much input does that person have into the script, into just everyday activities?
It's a great question, and I'll answer what I can, because I don't know everything about that. What I can say,
I think it's in the bathroom.
No, go ahead, John.
I can say that we have Chick Daniel. I don't know, Jennifer, if you've worked with him. He used to be in Metro, superhero of you know, he was on the force for decades, and now he's probably the preeminent advisor when it comes to being an ex-cop, now advisor on shows. I mean, one thing he really does focus on is really teaching the cops how to shoot, how to look like cops, how to act like cops. Now, you bring up a great point though, Jennifer, and I think it's really that fine line. We're not making a documentary, we're making television. And I think what's key for me, and again, I'm just one member of a big team, but what's important to me is that we're making the best television we can, but it's not coming across as science fiction. I would rather make more entertaining TV that might not be real, but at least it's realistic, right. But mm-hmm. We don't want it to be ludicrous. Now, have we knocked on that door maybe once or twice? Maybe, you know, not gonna lie. But that said, I think that's the fine line, and I think you bring up one of the challenging questions is you want, like, and again, like, for instance, Narcos. And have you guys watched the Narcos?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I lived that life for years down on the border.
So one of the greatest episodes of TV I've ever seen in my life was that episode of Narcos where Pablo Escobar takes out Carrillo. When he gets, it was a trap the whole time. And again, you know, I think his name was Carrillo. And that was literally one of the most mesmerizing episodes of TV I've ever seen. I thought it was utterly brilliant. And what I've read after the fact is that never happened in real life. Like, the show is actually based on a lot of reality. And you know, I guess they say it's 50%. It's inspired by facts. And I think about 50% of what's in there is real. And again, you know, hopefully you have them on there. I'm talking as a fan of the show right now. I'm not talking to the TV producer. I'm talking as a fan of the show. But it just happens to be that is one of my favorite episodes of TV I've seen in years. Another one of my favorite shows, and I know I'm going back a little bit, but Deadwood on HBO is one of my favorite shows of all time. And I have a major man crush on Ian McShane and Timothy Oliphant. And again, those are all based on real guys. You know, they're all inspired by real people. But that said, you're making TV. And again, of course, that's, you know, a much longer period of time. So in terms of going back to the LAPD today, you're right. There's a lot of stuff that these rookies are not doing. I think what's really important, as you touched on, is really keeping things realistic, but at the same time, how much can you push the envelope to create the most compelling drama you can?
It's a fine line, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you find from having obviously served in the military with your experience now with
you mentioned Grey's Anatomy too.
Like, has that impacted your work, your insight, your skill set, or like how does that impacted you of your experience being now in the business from being in the military before?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know when I first moved to Hollywood, I couldn't get, you know, a casting office to take me seriously as military because they said, you know, you just don't look military. They had a very set vision of what military was in their mind. So I went out and I created a short film with me as a lieutenant, a public affairs officer. And right after that, I got called in for Hawaii Five-O, and I booked a top of the show guest star for Hawaii Five-O playing an Air Force lieutenant colonel. So sometimes it's just... you know, and in those types of roles, ultimately it's going to go to the best actor. But if you can cast somebody with experience in the military or as a police officer, it is my thought process that they bring something inherently that's different to the role than an actor who is just emulating whatever he or she thinks someone might be. Of course, you know, there's many of us who work in these sorts of fields that don't have any acting skills whatsoever. The fields are very different. So it's always tough trying to find that perfect fit.
Did you study acting before you went into the military or only afterward?
No, only after. When I got out of the military, I went to school to be an actor.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And where are you from originally?
Colorado originally.
Oh, that's beautiful.
One thing I do got to give a lot of props to Jen is she also has her own show called Mysteries Decoded. So she gets away from that military persona. And she gets into her private detective role. And it's been out there for a while. It's on the CW. And now she's doing her interviews on Zoom. You know, she's adapting, but the show's really good. I love Mysteries Decoded. I'm so glad you're doing another season.
Yeah. Well, look, it's super smart that you're doing that, Jennifer. I'll say this real quick, and I'm sorry. But the one thing I love to hear that you're doing that is at the end of the day, the best thing that all of us can do, actors included, writers included, is if you could produce your own stuff and create your own properties. I mean, you're writing your own ticket. You know, it's like that great line and, you know, it stays in the picture. I want to be that guy. I want to be the guy that makes the decision, not, you know, and you know, so many of the great, you know, actors, you know, that we're seeing today. I mean, you know, men and women, a lot of them have obviously their own production companies now and are creating their own projects. And the fact that you're doing that is fantastic. I mean, that's what we all need to do.
Well, I just want to clarify. I feel like I created the opportunity, but the CW basically, you know, came and said, we're looking for someone who is a private investigator who has television experience. And after I left the LAPD Academy, I couldn't go back because of my injury. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to go to PI school. I wanted to be a detective in LAPD. That was my goal. I ended up not achieving that goal, but I said I can be a private investigator and work in the civilian sphere. So by the time, you know, the CW, the production company Morningstar, they were looking for a private investigator with experience in television, there's not many of us. So it was just one of those opportunities that came around, and I was the purple unicorn that they sought.
You know what, it's funny, we're talking about this on the air, but I'm actually friends with the woman who's the current executive on Stumptown, which is about a private detective. Actually, I should introduce you guys.
Uh-huh. You know, it's funny.
But I always try to like connect people, and if it works out, great, but I'll introduce
you. I got a bunch of messages when Stumptown premiered saying, did they rip off your life story? I said, no. I said, that was a comic. It's, you know, the coincidence is like, she's in the military now. She's a private investigator. And so I said, no, it existed long before that, but it was such a coincidence.
We'll touch base after this, but I'll connect you guys.
Great. Thank you.
Maybe cross things up for another season as well.
Oh, good.
I am going to kind of give Jennifer some more kudos because Jennifer's now an EMT.
I am an EMT. Yeah.
Wow.
Listen, she just Jason, got it, right? I am jack of all trades, master of none. So like, you know,
welcome
but
to my world.
I have like 1,000 jobs, but I do think, you know, to go back to John's point about Bill being in the Academy and bringing this full life to the LAPD, I think that as actors, as people, as police officers, whatever skills and experience we can bring to the table, you know, that's what I want to do. And as far as being an EMT, I was an EMR back in Colorado. All that had expired. I would drive past accidents on the highway, and I realized that I don't have that skill set anymore. I can't get out and help those people. I don't know what I'm doing. So I went to school, and I just took my national exam, and I passed it. I'm excited. But yeah, jack of all trades, master of none. But I'll never be jobless, right?
That's true.
I think personally that just makes you more interesting to watch. You know, going back to when I was in college, I remember, you know, when I was, you know, I had my fraternity friends, I had my theater friends, I had my, you know, liberal arts friends, and I remember like the actors that I went to Syracuse with that I always found the most interesting in terms of watching their work were the ones that had the most full lives outside the theater department.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that actually joined fraternities or played sports or had other hobbies beyond just sitting around the theater school holding hands, you know, humming, you know. So the fact that you have that, again, I it just makes you more interesting in a great way, I think.
I think it opens up a ton for roles, too. You know, going back to being a set advisor and stuff like that is like me, I've had, you know, I've worn 7 different badges in my 20 years and a military and a bunch, including a tour and a war. And I'm going to be the military advisor for a low budget movie called Clown Motel 2 coming up here in September. So all of us are trying to just, we have to have our hands in everything. And John, I'm sure you're the same way. Cause like, and we all, the reason I started this Protectors podcast was one, bring very positive stories to people who are in the Protector community, and rookie, bring like the people, the men and women in blue, and showing them in a different light. And then now bringing Fred Burton's, you know, historical chronicles of the 70s and 80s terrorism that has affected us ever since. You are part of the Protector community, regardless of sometimes, like when I tell people that, they're like, well, I never served. I'm like, well, you're serving in a different capacity. You're giving back in a different capacity. Just by you going to Jennifer and saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to introduce you to this person. I'm good at building networks. You're helping out someone in the Protector community. You're helping out a veteran. You're helping out someone who served. You are now part of that community as well. I don't know if you realize that.
I mean, I don't. And you're beyond kind to say that. And I mean, if that's the way I'm considered, then I'm honored. I mean, the fact is I've always been a huge supporter of obviously the military. And I think that goes well beyond wearing an American flag button. I mean, it's really about making sure you guys are taken care of and putting you guys in harm's way only when it's absolutely necessary and all these other things. It's not about, you know, it's not just a sentence, you know, and so I'm truly beyond appreciative of you guys and what you guys do. And look, you're very sweet to say so. Thank you. I mean, I'm just honored to hang out with you. And when this is all over, I'd just be honored to have beers with you guys and kind of
absolutely
hear stories. But again, I love your stories.
I do want to give a shout out to your alumni. Your Syracuse University has one of the best veteran programs out there. It just, they do. I'm one of these weird people that like to get degrees and stuff like that, but they do have incredible, incredible programs for veterans. So shout out to Syracuse.
Well, hopefully we'll get better at basketball and football soon.
I don't know about that. Come on.
And John, we know how fast paced Hollywood is. We know that it's kind of on a, you know, with COVID, but Hollywood's really fast-paced. I'm sorry, I haven't had my coffee this morning. I'm still intermittent fasting.
No.
It's an intermittent fasting thing. It's very high stress and it's fast-paced. And for you to take the time to meet with us today, we really appreciate it. And the wisdom and the advice and just the behind the scenes stories, you don't really get that. So we really appreciate that.
Well, look, again, I appreciate you guys. I feel the one who's honored to be on and hopefully, knock on wood, when we move forward with The Rookie and Beirut Rules and some other projects I have in development, I look forward to hopefully visiting again and chatting more and look forward to keeping in touch with you guys beyond this podcast. So it's really great to get to know you guys better.
And final question, because you mentioned New York, is every time I have anybody from the East Coast on, because I'm from Jersey, what is your favorite bagel and do you put anything on it?
Well, it's funny because H&H tragically closed, you know, which is the big story. That was always the famous bagel place. Right now, I guess probably, I mean, look, Zabar's is always going to be great on the Upper West Side. If you're in New York, definitely go to Russ and Daughters on Houston, get a bagel there. It's just beyond delicious. I could talk bagels, pizza. It's my favorite subject, but yeah, I would suggest
we might have to do a whole nother. other
show. Oh, just on
pizza.
Just on carbs.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'll always hold a candle to New York. I always felt like I'd move back there. And I guess like all you guys that are probably listening, you have this idea of what your life is going to be. It doesn't turn out that way. And I thought when I moved out here, I'd move back to New York in a year or two. And
I think we got cut off.
Have a little fun. And here I am 18 years later with, you know, a wife and a 5-year-old daughter. And it looks like I'm not going anywhere. But I do love New York. If people want to connect with me on Twitter, I used to have a dating blog, which is a whole nother conversation.
Uh-huh. Check their fridge. That's a whole nother blog right there.
And, I'm always happy to dole out New York advice of pizza, bagels, steak, burgers, Chinese food, deli. It's the best food capital of the world and always will be in my eyes.
Awesome. John, I appreciate it. Jennifer, thank you again. John, excellent conversation today. Looking forward to season 3 of The Rookie. And absolutely looking forward to Beirut Rules with just an excellent. If you're not following Fred Burton and Stratfor, do it. Fred is an expert in the world of counterterrorism. Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.